Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, a special three-hour presentation. We're going to look at autism and the vaccine connection. On one side is the majority of the scientific and medical community and virtually all of official health agencies, the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Service, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. They say there is no evidence between vaccines as an individual vaccine, any ingredient in vaccines, or combinations of vaccines and autism spectrum disorder. On the other side of this discussion are those individual scientists, physicians, activists and journalists, and most importantly, parents, who say there is a connection. Not only do they have that connection in articles and studies in clinical practice, but also parents who saw completely normal children developing after a series of vaccinations, those children receded. We're here to try to make sense of this argument. In our first hour, we have three panelists. Our first panelist will be Dr. Pavetsky. Lawrence Pavetsky is a board-certified pediatrician who's utilized a holistic approach to children's wellness and illness. Over the years, he has lectured and spoken extensively about vaccine risks and vaccine adverse reactions, including autism spectrum disorders and neurological damage. He received his medical degree from New York University School of Medicine. He did a three-year pediatric residency at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. And since 1991, his clinical experience includes working in pediatric emergency and intensive care medicine, in and outpatient pediatric medicine, neonatal intensive care medicine, newborn and delivery room medicine, and conventional holistic and integrative pediatric private practice. He's a diplomat of the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine and past president of the American Holistic Medical Association. He currently is in practice in Northport, Long Island, in Manhattan, where he specializes in treating acute and chronic pediatric and adult conditions. For more information about his practice or work, his website is Dr. Pavetsky, PalevSky.com. He will be joined later in the program by Ann Daschle. Ann is the leading media editor of Age of Autism, and for the past 8 years is the author of the recent book, The Big Autism Cover-Up: How and Why the Media is Lying to the American Public, which focuses on her 12 years of close monitoring of coverage about the autism epidemic and the way it covers vaccine safety and efficacy. She is the mother of 4 children, 2 were vaccine injured. She's been an educator for over 30 years and works with developmentally disabled children. She lives in Falls, Wisconsin, and the website with her daily reports and analysis, ageofautism.com. Our finalist panelist in the first hour will be Professor Brian Hooker. He is associate professor of biology at Simpson University in California. He is also a consultant in environmental restoration design. As a bioengineer, Dr. Hooker spent 16 years as a team leader for the Department of Energy's Genomes to Life Center for Molecular and Cellular Systems at its Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, where he investigated gene-protein networks, cell signaling, and cellular metabolic pathways. He is a prominent leader in the organization Focus Autism, which is investigating the scientific evidence for a vaccine-autism connection. Brian has a 16-year-old son with autism and has been active in autism communities for over a decade, including doing research and analysis of data on the association between vaccines and autism. And over the years, Brian has filed many Freedom of Information Act requests with federal health agency and has received thousands of pages of documents that he will claim supports the need to question the efficacy and safety of vaccination. He has been the point independent researcher in the recent whistleblower case of Dr. Thompson from the CDC regarding vaccine dangers. His website is focusautism.org. Let us begin. Nice to have you with us today, Lawrence.
Hi, Gary. Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
with the questions that we want to focus on, the key is objectivity, honesty, and fairness, something I feel has been lacking completely in the current national campaign to get people to vaccinate against the measles and to draw attention to the question, are these vaccines safe and effective? The debate is heated. On one side of the debate, we have calls for criminalizing any parent that refused to vaccinate their children, even to taking those children away from them and put them in foster care. Now, both sides of the argument claim they have research supporting their points of view. However, no one from the vaccine opponent side will say the kind of studies needed to be done to clear the confirmation whether unvaccinated children are healthier and have less complications than vaccinated kids has been performed yet. Since you have a long-established pediatric practice, you've seen thousands of children during the course of your practice, both vaccinated and unvaccinated. What would your response be on the quality of health between these two groups, and particularly with respect to possible neurological problems that might be assigned to autism or Asperger's or ADHD and or behavioral conditions?
Well, Gary, in over 15 years of seeing both vaccinated and unvaccinated kids, there's no doubt in my mind that the unvaccinated children are healthier. There's a normal sequence of brain development that goes from the hindbrain up to the forebrain, from the sides of the brain to the center. And one of the hallmarks of children with neurological and neurodevelopmental delays is that some or parts of their neurosequencing are delayed or impaired or even injured. And so children have motor delays, they have speech delays, they miss social cues, can't sit still, throw violent fits. So there's a definite difference in the brains and the sequencing, and you could see the difference in the development between these kids. And what people are refusing to acknowledge is the mechanisms by which the things like the MMR and vaccine in general can do to create the inflammation in this brains that can then derail normal sequencing of brain development. Studies have already shown in animals that if there's inflammation in the brain at crucial periods of development, there's going to be efforts by the brain to take care of the inflammation, which then derails important development. And then those animals who have the inflammation in their brain are found to have motor delays and behavioral problems months later. And there are chemicals in the vaccines, and I'll just focus on the MMR for a second. There are two chemicals in the MMR that have often worried me, and those are sorbitol and sucrose. And the blood-brain barrier is a very important protector of the brain. Sorbitol is a concentrated sugar solution. There are multiple things that can disrupt the blood-brain barrier, like inflammation, microwaves, radiation, hypertension, and something called hyperosmolarity, which is a very high concentration of material in the blood. When I was in medical school, we used to learn about scientists that would take high doses of sugar and inject it into the carotid artery of animals to open up the blood-brain barrier, shrink it, so that they could then get material from the bloodstream to go into the brain. Pharmaceutical industry is very well aware. It's hard to get drugs into the brain because this network of cells called the blood-brain barrier protects the brain from anything entering the brain. Now, the MMR has sorbitol and sucrose. We've never, ever measured whether the levels of sorbitol and sucrose that are injected through the MMR are actually changing the blood-brain barrier that allows for live attenuated measles, mumps, and rubella virus to get into the brain. Now, millions of parents have said, my child was fine, got the MMR, and then deteriorated weeks or even months later. We don't even know if the sorbitol transiently or impermanently opens the blood-brain barrier. We don't know if the sugar concentrations are that high to create the opening for the materials from the bloodstream or the vaccine to go into the brain. The same thing with vaccines before the children even get the MMR. There's a chemical called polysorbate 80 in the vaccines. Polysorbate 80 is an emulsifier. It's supposed to disperse vaccine material away from the injection site. But the one thing about polysorbate 80 is that it's used by the pharmaceutical industry to bind to drugs, to get it to cross the blood-brain barrier for people who have brain tumors and brain infections. Aluminum is very tightly bound to polysorbate 80, and vaccine antigens, bacterial and viral, are also very tightly bound to aluminum. So there's a complex of polysorbate 80 aluminum and vaccine antigen that can easily pass into the brain, causing brain inflammation. Again, these are scientific models that are very easy to study. They've already been studied in animal models. Sorbitol is already known to be used binding to a chemotherapeutic agent to get it to go across the blood-brain barrier. Mannitol is used by oncologists to open up the blood-brain barrier so they can then get chemotherapeutic agents to go into the brain. Sorbitol is also known to cause cell death, depletion of glutathione stores, and disruption of mitochondria. Polysorbate 80, also known to cause disruption of mitochondria. So you have two agents in the vaccines that have never been studied in children when they're vaccinated to see if they enhance vaccine material into the delivery into the brain. And yet you have all these kids, 1 in 6 children, with neurodevelopmental disorders. And people are walking around saying, no, vaccines have nothing to do with brain injury. It's preposterous. I mean, I can't, how can they not know that these chemicals are doing these things to these kids' brains? I don't know.
In a German online poll, it was found that among the over 13,000 unvaccinated respondents, 75% said they didn't vaccinate out of fear of the ingredients you just mentioned, meaning the added chemicals other than the actual viral component. Interestingly, about 90% of the respondents were from the United States. So clearly the fear of vaccination is based upon the ingredients, such as polysorbate that you mentioned, but also aluminum, thimerosal, formaldehyde, gelatin, and instead of the virus used in the vaccine. So take us a little further on this, because I'm curious about why we never look at the individual ingredients and look at the science. Now, later on in the next hour, we have probably the foremost expert in American history, a man who is in a high position at the CDC, the FDA, the EPA, a professor of microbiology, who did the first three classic studies on thimerosal. And he is pro-vaccine. And he said this. I'll just show this in this hour. People will hear in his own words in the next hour that he found that thimerosal did not work. It was not this great universal major sterilizer that would kill all bacteria. So using it as a way of killing off bacteria, it didn't work. He gave an example of how a whole lot of blood was sent over to Britain. In the Battle of Britain, they were running short on blood, and they used thimerosal as a preservative, and all the blood was contaminated. He gave that as an example. He also published hundreds of articles in peer-reviewed literature. It took him, and you will hear him say this, 18 years after he had presented three separate independent studies on the dangers of mercury, thimerosal, that it was finally considered serious enough to take it out. Then he said this, and I think this is so important. He said even though they took it out of the microgram amounts in vaccines, they left it in all vaccines in parts per billion. They said they had to leave it in there. He said, my evidence showed conclusively that even in parts per billion, thimerosal, mercury, is a neurotoxin, it's dangerous, and shouldn't be at all. And yet, today, ask a pediatrician, is there mercury in this vaccine? With the exception of the flu vaccine, they'll say no. It's not true. It is. Now, just as an aside before you address this, we're all familiar with Brian Wimms, NBC's popular news host, that he acknowledged that he out-and-out fabricated information about being in a helicopter that was shot down. all of the American media is on him with so-called expert media panels talking about how egregious this is. He should quit. He should step aside. He no longer has confidence. And over again, you hear them say no longer has confidence. And I'm thinking they missed the entire point. It's not that he lied about the helicopter. He lied. They all lied about weapons of mass destruction.
All right.
So if they lied about weapons of mass destruction, and think of the consequences to Iraq, to American injured and killed, to the depleted uranium, and they don't even acknowledge that part, then when I hear the analysis here that you must take your measles vaccine, it's safe, it doesn't cause disease, we're not looking at what's in the measles vaccine. We're not looking at the history of this vaccine. We're not interviewing pediatricians board certified like yourself who have a history and a knowledge of this issue. We're simply saying shouldn't question it. If we're telling you it's clean and healthy, it's no different than as if the American medical establishment and the American media were replaying the same scenario, the same propaganda campaign, as they did with the war in Iraq leading up to it, weapons of mass destruction, or the vaccines are safe and effective. Vaccines are safe and effective. Instead of the truth. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, a couple of things. One, I am aware that thimerosal is still in the vaccines. In 1999, when the American Academy of Pediatrics suggested that they take it out, it wasn't really taken out until close to 2003, and then it was listed as trace thimerosal in the package insert. Somewhere after 2003, all of a sudden, trace thimerosal disappeared from the package insert. But I know from a colleague of mine who had the vaccines assayed that he still found mercury in the vaccines. Mercury is a neurotoxin. Aluminum is a neurotoxin. Mercury and aluminum together are more neurotoxic than a little bit of mercury and a little bit of aluminum separately. They will tightly bind to polysorbate 80. That's one of the hallmark features of the polysorbate 80. It's lipophilic. These heavy metals love to bind to fat molecules. Passes right into the brain easily, no problem. The other interesting thing about sorbitol, it's not even licensed for injection. The U.S. government says not to be injected. We have no safety data on it. And so what I think is happening is that despite the fact that scientists, physicians, and parents are bringing this science to light, the science is irrelevant. The truth of the science seems to be irrelevant. And there seems to be such a stronghold and a strong arming because of an ideology that vaccines must not be stopped and we must continue to increase it. And it's almost like the people who believe in the vaccines and the vaccine safety are either paid by the pharmaceutical industry or have just been so swept by the propaganda that they have no ability to just step back and ask the questions that many, many physicians and parents are starting to question. What is really going on here is that the science doesn't even seem to be relevant anymore. And that's what's becoming more dangerous. Now it's more about unconstitutionality of mandates and the potential for coercing and strong-arming people into getting vaccinated and even lining them up. So the issues are changing, not even about science anymore, Gary. It doesn't even appear that people want to know the science. And it's almost like putting a wooden nickel in a slot machine because it's just not going to compute. There's just no relevance to the information for these people. And it's just making a lot of parents and a lot of scientists and clinicians say, what are we getting into here? Because the science is becoming irrelevant also.
Lawrence, let's look at the most popular and respected pro-vaccine advocate probably in the world, Dr. Paul Offit. Dr. Offit is on record saying he opposes the removal of mercury from vaccines. Now, since aluminum serves, as you just mentioned, as an adjuvant, it is basically critical for triggering antibody immune responses so that it's not going away unless they use squalene, which has been found equally dangerous and a cause for autoimmune disease, such as in some Gulf War syndrome conditions. Dr. Offit is convinced that removing thimerosal will make no difference and won't affect the autism rate. And I should mention he also refers to the cost factor of having to make only single-dose vials. How do you respond to Offit on the grounds that he states, plus two additional statements? One, Offit has claimed that vaccines are so safe that a kid could take 10,000 vaccines at a time. And then I was told, though I have not independently confirmed it, that he upped that amount to 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So why doesn't he take those 10,000 himself in the amounts normally given to children to see what the outcome would be? And if he is completely well after 10,000 vaccines, he may have a point. Secondly, he was recently on Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman show. Unfortunately, he would not come on at the same time that a leading critic of vaccines, who is also a professor of law at New York University, was on to have an open and hopefully an enlightening debate. Instead, the show had a pro-vaccine person open, the woman in the middle, Mary, and then pro-vaccine Offit ending and calling her a conspiratorial, theorist and all this,
right,
without her having a chance to respond.
Correct.
Here's my question. If you were hosting a show, wouldn't you want to know, do you have any conflict of interest? Have you made money from vaccines? If so, how much and who gives you? At your university in Pennsylvania, your department, we understand from official filings that it's received tens of millions of dollars, true or not. We understand that you sold your interest in a vaccine you invented for tens of millions of dollars, true or not. We understand that the rotavirus vaccine was withdrawn to the market but attributed to over 354 deaths of babies, true or not. Now, if someone wanted to come on my program and in their resume they had an invention that had killed 354 children, I'm not going to focus upon what they say about being pro-vaccine until they can explain in any measurable legitimacy how they can be considered an expert when their creation failed, deadly failure. Your thoughts on this?
Right.
Please.
So here's the problem that we're facing in this country. I mean, I don't know Paul Offit. I've never spoken to him. I'm not interested in commenting on him as a person. I'll just use the themes of what he and others have said. Someone like Dr. Offit saying he's convinced doesn't make it so. But the media takes it as fact. So there's a translation from a person like Dr. Offit saying, I'm convinced that thimerosal isn't doing what we say it's doing, or I'm convinced it isn't a problem. That all of a sudden becomes fact. And then he waves, and people like him wave the magic wand, and it's like a game of telephone, where the story then becomes, you see, vaccines can't be made without thimerosal, and thimerosal is not a problem. Again, the same thing about 10,000 antigens and 100,000 antigens. It's a similar statement. He waves his wand, people like him wave their wand, and it is taken as fact. There is no science to back up either of those claims. And the third thing is that it is my understanding, and I've heard Dr. Offit say this, and I've heard people like him say this, we don't need to be on a stage with people who have an opposing view, because there is no argument to debate. They are right. And Dr. Offit has said specifically that the science of vaccines is irrefutable. Vaccines are safe. They've been appropriately tested. There is no debate. And because there is no debate and science is true, you cannot have a religious belief about science, and you cannot have a philosophical belief about science. Therefore, religious and personal beliefs and philosophical beliefs should not be accepted because the science is irrefutably true. Even though there is a bevy of science that will not be published by the mainstream media and will not even be read by those people who are so violently pro-vaccine, that will never make it to the public's eye. But it's a growing groundswell. I mean, people are starting to read these studies, and they're starting to see that when they punch their hand against the wall, their hand breaks. When their kids get a vaccine and something happens, their experience is real. And when people in the medical community keep saying to them, no, what you saw and what you experienced is not true, it's a figment of your imagination, it couldn't possibly be, people are starting to get angry. And it's the anger that is threatening to that stronghold that won't allow any discussion. And that's why we're seeing this attempt at federal mandates. People don't realize that we're close to having something close to martial law around vaccination.
I would say that we are already facing such an authoritarian rule that it's a form of medical fascism. I do not believe that that is hyperbolizing.
Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts for you about the measles outbreak in California and the claims of measles vaccine safety and it not being associated with autism in any way.
Well, first of all, the measles vaccine is known to shed measles virus. That's number one. So when you hear of an outbreak, you cannot discount the possibility that a measles vaccine could be responsible for the outbreak. That's number one. Number two, there's 24 genotypes of measles viruses. The one genotype in the measles vaccine is genotype A. Now, we are told that the vaccine against genotype A will cover all 24 genotypes. That's what we're told. But the outbreak of the measles infections in California and Utah so far have shown that the measles virus that was expressed was measles genotype B3. And so we are told that the measles vaccine will protect all genotypes. But what has to be studied is whether the antibodies that are produced against genotype A are also expressed against genotype B to cause that to have the same effect. We don't know that. But again, people are just blaming the unvaccinated kids. And the unfortunate thing here is that vaccines, people are made to believe that when children are vaccinated, and enough children are vaccinated, they will no longer carry the measles virus. And therefore, unvaccinated children who are not vaccinated will still carry the measles virus, not to mention the millions of other adults who haven't been given the measles vaccine in decades who couldn't possibly be carrying the measles virus. It's only the small percentage of unvaccinated children who are blamed for carrying a virus that nobody else is supposed to carry if they're vaccinated. The problem is that people are led down a dead end. Vaccines do not stop children or adults from carrying the virus or bacteria against which they're vaccinated. So you could still carry a germ even if you're vaccinated. And so these false assumptions and these false statements, they gain a lot of momentum. And so people really believe that vaccinated children are no longer capable of passing these germs on, and that only vaccinated children are. And that's incorrect. And how do you get the public to understand that the myths upon which we base the vaccine science are actually not completely true, and some of them may be completely false? And so you see people screaming at the tops of their lungs to try to, you know, give this information to the automatons who can't register the wooden nickel in the slot machine. And that's why I said that the science is almost irrelevant, because people really believe that if you're vaccinated, you no longer are carrying the germ and you're no longer capable of passing it along. And it's just sad. It's getting to a sad place where you're seeing a deficient mental state where the learning capacity and the thinking capacity and the reasoning capacity is being lost.
Well, we've seen that with Mother Jones, with The Nation magazine. That doesn't surprise anyone. We've seen it with MSNBC, with John, with the Daily Show. We've seen it also with people on the left, Pacifica, who simply refuse to acknowledge that the science is there to support challenging the safety and efficacy until such time that there's a study where you have 1,000 unvaccinated, 1,000 fully vaccinated children, you follow them for 3 years, you take regular medical evaluations and see what is the outcome.
Right.
They've jumped down the throat of those who refuse to vaccinate, and that's unfortunate because they are so wrong on this. Well, Lawrence, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your points of view on this.
Thank you, Gary.
Lawrence Palevsky, Palevsky, board-certified physician, and he is a pediatrician treating thousands of children. He was straight, unequivocal, and to the point. He is completely the mindset based upon his extensive, not only review of the scientific literature, but his in-depth clinical experience that unvaccinated children are healthier than vaccinated children. Let me mention before we go to our next guest that this is a three-hour presentation. You're going to be hearing from people in the next hour on like Dr. Boyd Haley and others who will deconstruct the myth of the safety and efficacy of the poliovirus vaccine and the measles vaccine and smallpox vaccines. Let me also mention that in our final hour, you'll have a chance to either listen to the audio of the multi-award-winning documentary Silent Epidemic after the program, or you can click on the Silent Epidemic, a DVD cover on PRN, the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com FM homepage, and watch the whole movie there as well. So you can watch it or you can listen to it. Let us now go to our two panelists remaining, Ann Daschle and Dr. Brian Hooker. Brian, we're going to begin with you. During the recent coverage of the vaccine debate on Democracy Now!, Paul Offit made a statement that has become one of the stalwart pinnacles of the vaccine establishment. Answering the question of what causes autism, Offit stated, and I quote, quote, "It is clearly, if you look back at the science of autism, at least genetic. We know it appears in utero. There is no evidence of environmental influence, especially from vaccines, that have ever been shown to increase the rate of risk of autism," end quote. Now, what does this science show? And now no one will say that there is a single cause for all autisms. Not even the opponents of vaccine are that naive to suggest that. We know from other areas of environmental and toxicological science that autism can be caused by other non-vaccine environmental causes. The Union of Concerned Scientists released an extensive study showing a relationship between autism and particulate matter from fossil fuel processing. In the vicinity of highly pesticide-reliant farms, autism rates are significantly higher. Excessive inorganic mercury and other toxic heavy metals through sources other than vaccines have been associated with autism and neurological disorders. And several years ago, the Environmental Working Group undertook an extremely costly study and found 180-plus of the 210 most common toxic environmental compounds were found in fetal cord blood samples, which indicates that a mother can pass highly toxic chemicals directly to the fetus in the womb. In every one of these instances, and there are more, there is research supporting an environmental exogenous cause for the onset of autism. And yet, according to the CDC, Paul Offit and the pro-vaccine people, vaccines are exempt as culprits. So based upon all the evidence of autism across all the areas of research, the pro-vacciners are subject to what I can only call epigenetic denialism. The new science of epigenetics, which is revolutionizing our understanding of DNA and the regulation of genes, is an enormous threat to the pro-vaccine argument because, an Offit, as he confirms, they deny outright environmental factors as causal agents for autism. And, of course, neither Offit nor any of the other pro-vaccine trolls can answer the question for why a polymorphic change of a gene which may be significantly present in a group of autistic children, is there in the first place. If the gene was not inherited from either parent, and research at the University of Montreal has confirmed that all these so-called autism genes are de novo and not inherited, but mutagens that took place in utero, then why? And why these particular de novo genes that are more common in autistic kids rather than non-autistic children? So can you address this epigenetic denialism that is rampant among the pro-vaccine advocates and try to explain more clearly what it is they're denying and therefore why their arguments are faulty and misleading in light of modern genetic science?
Well, Gary, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's an honor to be here. And I want to start with Dr. Offit. Dr. Offit is an epidemiologist, or I'm sorry, he's an immunologist, and he makes vaccines for a living. He made the rotavirus vaccine that you mentioned before, which has caused numerous fatalities in the United States. And he is definitively not an expert on autism. And so when he made the statements that he did regarding genetic reductionism in autism on the show Democracy Now!, he had no basis for that particular argument. And, you know, to look at this at its heart, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the Institute of Medicine, the big pharmaceutical companies, and pundits like Paul Offit are diagnosing based on their own convenience. It is convenient for them to say that vaccines are not causally related to autism, even though we're taking environmental neurotoxins and we're injecting them directly in the body, the same neurotoxins that have been associated with the autism epidemic in other environmental platforms. And so, you know, there is absolutely no definitive proof regarding the inherited autism gene, as you said. And when scientists are even looking at the genotype, which is only one small fraction of what could be causing autism, like you said, they're finding de novo mutations. These are mutations that occur in the child themselves. They're not inherited from the parents, and they're finding these mutations in the sections of the chromosomes that are most highly mutated most of the time.
What will it take for the vaccine establishment to enter the post-genomic age and the medical advances of toxicological and epigenetic discovery and leave behind its outdated determinist reductionist understanding of genetics, the linear gene-to-disease relationship that is now being challenged outside of the vaccine scientific community?
Frankly, Gary, I think people need to go to jail. Yeah. And I think there needs to be serious consequences for the cavalier statements that are putting the public health in a threat situation and are creating this toxicological epidemic that we call autism, autoimmune disorders, neurological disorders, and chronic disease in the United States. I think that when somebody like CDC representatives take a platform and this happened in the U.S. Senate in a committee meeting today on the measles vaccine, and for Dr. Ann Shewcat to take the posture that autism is not caused by vaccines without definitive proof, that's cavalier, it's reckless, and it's putting individuals at risk. Okay, and it put individuals like my own child who is vaccine injured at risk. And when we look at the background of the CDC, these individuals know vaccines cause autism. I have no doubt about that. And I've seen it with the CDC whistleblower, which I've talked about on your show before, Dr. William Thompson, where he has admitted that they have been told to lie. And we have individuals that lie under oath, like they did today, and there needs to be consequences for these lies.
Hold your thoughts. This is Professor Brian Hooker, Associate Professor of Biology at Simpson University in California, and one of America's leading research scientists on the subject of autism spectrum disorder in relationship to environmental, including vaccines. I want to come back to you in a few moments and speak in depth about Dr. Thompson, since you were the point person that he reached out to, a whistleblower. Someone who finally came forward 14 years late to tell the truth about the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine and its relationship to autism, how he engaged in a cover-up of the truth. That story needs to be told to the people listening today to this show. But let's now invite Anne Dashawan. Anne, nice to have you with us today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And one of the great concerns, people who oppose vaccines and fear the risk of neurodevelopmental problems associated with vaccination, is that the government, particularly the CDC and the Health and Human Services, which oversees all governmental agencies, health agencies, hide invaluable information on vaccine safety from the public. Unlike pharmaceutical drugs, the government is more fully entrenched and invested, even financially so, in the vaccine paradigm. Now, the bonds between government and private vaccine manufacturers and big pharma exist in a symbolic, symbiotic, and codependent relationship. And therefore, what is discussed behind closed doors never, unless it's leaked, reaches the public and the mainstream media, with very few exceptions, such as Cheryl Atkinson, a reporter who broke through and told the truth and paid a price for it. All this information is completely subservient to Big Pharma and the official word out of the CDC. Now, since U.S. government has failed over and over again to take vaccine injury claims seriously since the passing of the Vaccine Compensation Act, the public is basically left in the dark for understanding why the rate of autism has been rising so rapidly, 1 in 68 now, and expected to rise to about one-third of all children in the next 5 years. And what is even worse, the media, both mainstream and the successful alternative news outlets, refuse to undertake any objective investigative themselves to determine possible cause of this epidemic. They're simply reactive, whether it's The Nation magazine or Mother Jones or MSNBC or John Daly. It's purely reacting. It's as if someone gave them talking points memos from the CDC or vaccine manufacturer and said, here's what you say about vaccines and people who refuse to vaccinate. And they don't talk about the science. They don't attack on science. They attack on the fact that you're an irresponsible person putting their children, everyone else's children at risk if you don't vaccinate. And so where's the objectivity? There is none. Now, you've been covering the reporting on autism and vaccines daily for many years now. So please take your time and review with us the basic policies by which the media, including the alternative media, covers autism and the autism-vaccine relationship, and what are the most important reporting spins we should be aware of? And more specifically, what evidence have you discovered within the media which suggests it intentionally covers up adverse vaccine science and its association with neurodevelopmental problems on behalf of vaccine makers and the federal health agencies? The forum is yours.
Well, thank you. And what I have found is that I think that the media is scared. I think that even the thought of exposing corruption, malfeasance in a mandated government program is overwhelming to most members of the media. I like to put reporters into different categories, and I, having dealt with them for about 10 years, and I think a number of them simply take the easy way out. It's much easier to go to the CDC website, get a printout, get some information. These are the government officials who look into everything. They're overseeing our health. They say vaccines are safe. They don't cause autism. And no one bothers to look into the fact that hundreds of individuals at the CDC have conflict of interest waivers because they have direct financial ties to the vaccine makers. When Julie Gerberding, who was the head of the CDC and spent years denying any link between autism and vaccines, when she left the CDC and went to work for Merck, almost no one in the media covered it. And even the couple places that I found that did, there was no implication of, gee, is someone who was so adamant that vaccines didn't cause autism is now going to work for one of the major vaccine companies in the world. It should have raised a little
a little bit of interest, if nothing else, if not questions in the media. The media, I also think members of the media are very intimidated by the fact that the mainstream medical community, health officials, local doctors, it seems like everybody is right there vouching for the safety of vaccines. And there's always the implication, what if I write about this and honestly explore this and find out that a lot of the things that they're telling us aren't really true, and parents don't vaccinate, children die of disease, and I think they're very afraid of this. I cannot explain the fact that the media simply refuses to honestly and thoroughly investigate this issue. And obviously, after what's happened over measles and these exemptions, this is truly the most heated controversy in medicine today. It's not going to go away.
All right. One of the name games that gets played is using the A word, autism.
Mm-hmm.
We can speak of vaccines causing neurodevelopmental damage in the vaccine courts of awarding victims of neurodevelopmental injuries. And we can speak of vaccines causing retardation and seizures, but not autism, even though conditions like retardation, seizures, and encephalopathic conditions can be symptoms associated with autism. Well, the pro-vaccine advocates are adamant against using the word autism as an adverse effect, although not completely so far for the other injuries. So what do you believe is the larger strategy behind this? There's some larger picture to this puzzle that is not being exposed. What do you believe it is?
Well, I think it's the A word. It's and this has been out for several years now. There are people that file claims of vaccine injury with the federal vaccine injury compensation program. If they use encephalopathy, if they use seizures as the injury, they stood a much better chance of the government compensating them than if they said their child developed autism as a result. We don't have an epidemic in this country of encephalopathy. We have an epidemic of autism. And so if the government were very openly acknowledging, yeah, well, the vaccines can cause autism, I mean, that'd be horrendous. But no one wants to go there.
What do you think of those groups that support research on autism and education, but they do not believe and have been adamant, saying there is no association between vaccines and autism? Is there anything that you've uncovered in their funding or any bias that brings them to that decision, or are they simply giving their opinion even though it's not based upon the good science?
Well, if we tend to hear about Autism Speaks, it's the internationally known advocacy group for autism. I mean, they're the ones that came up with the idea, every April we're going to celebrate autism, we're going to light the world up in blue, and everybody looks to them as these are the people that really care about autism, and they're doing everything they can. They're funding all this autism research, and yet they're right out there. In fact, over this measles outbreak and all the questions on the vaccine, they've gone public recently in saying there is no link. Parents should vaccinate their children. There's a tremendous disconnect. It's almost as if it's a counterproductive organization. Autism Speaks has poured all kinds of millions of dollars into genetic research looking for the genes that cause autism or the very, you know, outside of your imagination view of what could cause autism. And they've not been there to address the really critical issue. Currently, they have Dr. Rob Lee at Autism Speaks. And as a medical expert, he used to work for Pfizer, a drug company, vaccine maker.
and now he is connected to autism speaks, and that should tell us something right there.
Well, when he is interviewed, it's fine for him to have that opinion, but it's an opinion. And does he get asked about his former association or anything that he may still have in the way of consulting positions or financial remuneration? If that exists, shouldn't he be asked to explain that?
You know, I would think that, but it never happens. I mean, how often do we hear about Paul Offit? You were speaking of him, Dr. Paul Offit, head of infectious diseases at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And it is almost, I mean, it's so rare that anyone says that he is the co-inventor of the rotavirus vaccine and made millions of dollars from that vaccine. And so we pretend that everybody is being open and honest, and this is just about the science, and that's what the public is being told, but it's not reality.
Could you tell us something about the rotavirus or any other vaccine that has caused injuries or death, and it's been acknowledged that it causes injuries or death? They've either been withdrawn from the market or they've had some form of warning associated with it.
I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist. I do know that the first rotavirus was removed from the market, and the second one is supposedly a safe version, but as you were saying before, there are deaths associated with it. Gardasil, there is so much information on Gardasil out there and the deadly side effects, and if you were to see the movie The Greater Good, in that movie, this documentary that's been seen by over 5 million people around the world, there were three incidents of vaccine injury that were included in that movie, and one of them is a girl damaged by Gardasil. So we know that it's a very dangerous vaccine.
I want to thank Ann Daschle for being on from the Age of Autism, and Dr. Brian Hooker, Associate Professor of Biology at Simpson University in California, and Dr. Palveski, board-certified pediatrician. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is a special edition of the Progressive Commentary Hour. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.